Thanks for listening. I'm Jacob Kaufman with KUAR. Former Safe Food CEO and Republican gubernatorial hopeful Curtis Coleman joins me in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Delighted to be here, Jacob. Thank you.
I want to begin by focusing on economic development. You've had some disagreement with your opponent, Asa Hutchinson, about using state funds as incentives for private businesses. What are your feelings on state investment in super projects, particularly Big River Steel?
Well, let me first of all say, and I think my position has been misconstrued just a little bit. Of course, those things never happen in politics. But, you know, I supported, and I'm glad that Big River Steel is being built in Arkansas. Let me say that first of all, and I think it's great for the economy of Mississippi County and also Osceola. My objection was the use of $125 million, $130 million of taxpayer money, mainly because, and almost entirely because of the location. Because there's another steel company in Mississippi County. In fact, Mississippi County is now the second largest steel producing county in North America, right here in Arkansas. A lot of people don't know that. But I had the privilege of going through one of Nucor Steel's plants, and they let me talk to any employee in the plant that I wanted to, and which I thoroughly enjoyed. I asked all the employees I talked to a lot of questions, but the two I asked were, are you from Arkansas and do you live in Arkansas? And out of about two dozen, so not a scientific poll at all, but out of two dozen or so that I talked to, nobody that I talked to lived in Arkansas. They all lived in Western Tennessee and Southeast Missouri. And when I pursued that farther, it's because they can keep more of the money they make if they don't live in Arkansas. So I'm concerned, and I will tell you, genuinely and deeply concerned, that we were using Arkansas taxpayer money to create jobs, long-term jobs for people who live in Tennessee and Missouri. And I'm glad for people in Tennessee and Missouri to have jobs. I just don't want to use Arkansas taxpayer money to do that when I think we can do a lot better things with it.
Arkansas's current tax structure has lower income residents paying a higher percentage of their income than wealthier residents. Can you detail your tax plan and how you might make up the differences to balance the state budget?
Well, my tax plan has two components. One is a tax cut, and it began with my interest in running for governor at all. And I began to study the economy of Arkansas compared to the economy of our neighboring states. And what I discovered was that compared to almost all of our neighboring states, we're doing pretty poorly. In fact, we're 49th in the nation in median household income. To translate that differently, if you live in almost any state with which Arkansas shares a border and you just make the median household income, you make $138 a week more if you live in one of our neighboring states than if you live in Arkansas. And that's frustrating and, in my opinion, unnecessary. So two things I did, one with my tax policy. One is, let's start being more competitive by reducing the state income tax is paid by every Arkansan. And so what I did was is that I applied a formula that maintains the same amount of drop for taxpayers. So those at the lowest bracket, actually, by the time my tax plan is fully executed, will be paying zero taxes. And but fundamentally, we're going to drop. If I'm allowed to be governor for 8 years, we're going to cut your state income taxes every year for eight consecutive years. The other side of my plan, if you look at it carefully, is how we're going to compensate for the loss in state revenue. And what we do is we do a very aggressive development of small business in Arkansas. Small business creates 60 to 70% of our jobs. So the plan is a balance. We lower state income taxes while we broaden the tax base. And it's a proven economic model that even John F. Kennedy subscribed to. You know, John F. Kennedy told the Economic Club of New York in December of 1962, our taxes are too high and our revenues are too low. And his remedy was to lower taxes.
Right. Certainly a different situation then. I think taxes on the wealthiest bracket were around 90% at that time.
And they were.
Now they're down
right
in the 30s. But I understand your point. Moving a little bit from individual income taxes to corporate taxes, do you think the states and some of the world's wealthiest companies like Walmart and Tyson pay their fair share in Arkansas?
Yeah, actually, I think they do. You know, I think you start defining fair share, and there's a lot of ways to define that. But, I mean, if you just went with a flat tax and everybody paid the same percentage, the people who make more money and with greater income are going to pay a lot more in taxes. So start with defining fair share. We have a very progressive tax rate. We have an aggressive progressive tax rate where we not only require people who make more money to just out of the same percentage pay a lot more taxes, but we require them to pay a much greater percentage. You know, and that'll always be a discussion. I mean, how do you define fairness? How do you find equality? And, you know, it's the beauty's in the eye of the beholder and what the percentages ought to be. I personally think they do. I think, if I understand correctly, the top 20% of wage earners in America pay what is it, 75% of all the taxes paid in America, and or 90%, and the top 10% pay 70%. I mean, you know, I think, in my opinion, there is a good balance here. And everything else is a matter of discussion. It depends on who's doing the calculations.
I guess for the purpose of this interview, you're the beholder.
Okay, right.
Only for this interview. Circling back around to the idea of broadening the tax base to make up that difference to balance the budget, is your argument that by reducing the income tax, that will then generate more jobs and more revenue to the point where you wouldn't have to cut various state agencies?
Well, my argument is that by generating more new jobs in Arkansas, we can lower the cost of government for every Arkansan. The bottom line is that every Arkansan gets to keep more of their money. I mean, that's fundamentally what I want to do. In fact, if you look at my tax plan and the goals I've stated for my administration, you know, it amazes me because I'm the only candidate, Democrat or Republican candidate, who stated in his goals that one of the things he wants to do is he wants to reduce the number of Arkansans living in poverty by at least 20%. I want to cut the number of people living in poverty in Arkansas by at least 100,000 people over 8 years. I mean, gosh, let's look at that. So basically, that's by creating more and better paying jobs. I also want to move Arkansas's median household income from 49th to 25th. That means we got to move the median household income in Arkansas from $40,100 a year to over $53,000 a year. The only way you do that is by creating more and better paying jobs. So if you create, the goal is to let every Arkansan become more prosperous and to let the median household income dramatically rise over 8 years. I mean, that defines the steps we take to get to those goals.
And speaking about some of that population, and at least near the poverty line or at the poverty line or below it, could you articulate your position on the private option, which is Arkansas's plan to use expanded eligibility and funds from the Affordable Care Act, intended for the federally run Medicaid program, but the state has chosen to pursue purchasing private insurance for those 150,000 to 250,000 individuals?
Well, my position comes from several sources. One is I think Obamacare is going to be a disaster for our health care and for our economy. I also believe that the private option was an extension of Obamacare. I also think that the private option was the most dramatic expansion of government, single expansion of government in Arkansas's history. Fundamentally, I believe, and I think I trace this all the way back to the founders and framers of our country, particularly Thomas Jefferson, that as you expand government, you reduce the liberty of people. And one of the reasons is because you expand government, which is what the private option did, government automatically gets bigger and it costs more. The more government costs, the less we have as individuals to keep and use in our discretion. I believe the private sector could have done a lot better job in providing health care for Arkansans. I don't think the private sector had an opportunity to do that. And so people ask, well, if you get rid of the private option, what are you going to do? And my answer is two things. One is I want to put those who are stakeholders at the front of designing the system. I'm talking about doctors, nurses, healthcare administrators, medical clinic administrators, hospital administrators, patients, and people who are on the current Medicaid subsidy program. I want those to be involved. I think if we create a group of those people and give them an opportunity, I believe they can create a much better solution for healthcare in Arkansas. The second thing I want to do with that, Jacob, is I want to lock all the bureaucrats in the room while those folks get the job done. If you look at what we have in healthcare now, it was designed, in my opinion, by people who had no experience in healthcare, who had fundamentally no experience in the real world, who were bureaucrats with little experience outside of the bureaucracies. And I think what we got as a result of that, I think Arkansans can design a fantastic health care plan for Arkansans if they're given the opportunity and the choice, and that's what I want to do.
But do you believe the state government, in partnership with the federal government or on its own accord, should in some way act to subsidize health insurance for those people making below 140% of the poverty line?
You know, I will tell you this. I believe that it is legitimate use of state taxpayer funds and federal funds to provide health care and other essentials for people who are genuinely disabled and incapable of taking care and providing for themselves. Everything else, like where the level is, 140% of poverty, is the same kind of discussion that we had a moment ago about what's the fair share for everybody paying taxes. And it's going to be a discussion you work out. I fundamentally believe it's a legitimate use of taxpayer funds to take care of people who genuinely need assistance and the help. working out the details of where that break is going to be a discussion we have as we go forward.
With those people, 150,000 have signed up now, possibly 200,000 by the time of the general election. You mentioned it's not necessarily you would prefer to have some alternative in place for them. They'll let the private insurance work it out. But say it comes up for reauthorization on a yearly basis. When you come to that point, would you pull the plug on that program without having the other alternative already in place?
I would not pull the plug on anybody's health care insurance like, in fact, Obamacare has done, in my opinion, without having a legitimate and practical alternative available to people, right?
The state legislature has also aggressively pursued restrictions to abortion. Do you support those efforts, including an act currently being challenged banning most abortions after 12 weeks?
Yes, I do. My position fundamentally is a theological position. I, from a theological point of view, believe that life starts at conception. I believe the moment there's a human embryo, there's a human being that deserves all the protection the law affords at any stage of life. And so everything stems from that personal opinion, and my position on that stems from that belief.
And regarding environmental issues, many in the state are re-examining feelings on oil pipelines after the spill in Mayflower. That fear of pollution extends to other industries like natural gas drilling and fracking and the building of an industrial hog farm along the Buffalo River. Do you support any further regulations in those areas? I know they're all three very distinctly different areas. Or do you think current standards are sufficiently protecting Arkansans?
I think in general, and there may be some specific exceptions with which I'm not familiar, but I think in general we have adequate laws and regulations to protect us. You know, it's the issue may not be more regulations. It may be the enforcements of the ones we've got that we may have a real battle with. You know, and I will tell you, frankly, I think you mentioned the hog farm a moment ago. I would not have issued a permit for that hog farm to be on that river. And I will tell you why, because I think my property, just like all of our constitutional rights, all of our rights end where they infringe on somebody else's. And so property rights are the same way. My property rights, that is to use my land any way I want to, which is, I think, a fundamental right of an American, ends where I infringe on the rights of someone else. And I think that hog farm does that. But I'm an intense defender of property rights and the rights to privacy. But I think we've got enough regulations. In fact, we may have too many, but we have enough regulations. The question is, are we enforcing them?
One of the issues with the Lake Maumelle watershed, important to people in central Arkansas, particularly, I imagine statewide it's an issue as well, is that under existing regulations and policies, it's perfectly legal and legitimate for the Pegasus pipeline that ruptured in Mayflower to run through Lake Maumelle watershed. Do you think that's acceptable?
Well, there are two issues there. One is it's acceptable for the pipeline to run through that watershed, but there are standards and regulations requiring the proper maintenance and safety of those pipelines. Those are two different issues. And I think if both of those are executed properly and completely, that you won't have the risk that we saw recently in Lake Conway.
And what are your thoughts on education? Higher ed officials will tell you their budgets aren't keeping up with costs, and that same critique goes down the line all the way to state-funded preschool. What are your plans to fund these institutions, especially in light of some of those tax cuts?
Well, I'll tell you several things. One is, and you know, I'm a businessman. I approach government from the point of business, and I think we can run state government more efficiently like a business. And I also think that what I'm proposing with my tax plans and economic development plans will, as they develop, I think will provide more revenue for the state to be more generous with education. Sometimes people have accused me of, because of my tax cuts, of threatening education. There's nothing in my tax cut plans that threatens education at all. I think there are other issues related to education that may not require more funds. For instance, one of the things is I talk to teachers all over Arkansas, and I spent a lot of time the last 2 years intentionally spending a lot of time with public school teachers and public school administrators. And I'm asking them, what's the number one issue that you deal with? And guess what they tell me? They say they spend 40 to 45% of their day filling out paperwork. And they're all telling me that they're not getting to teach. And we have some of the finest teachers in America right here in Arkansas, in my humble opinion. But they're bailing out because we're not letting them teach. And so one of the things I proposed is that we limit the number and kinds of standards and regulations that the state can force down on local school districts. We got to let our teachers teach. I mean, that's one of the biggest issues we're facing. That's not a funding problem. I mean, that's a different kind of problem we have to address. I will tell you that I'm very aggressive in supporting additional funding for our 2-year community colleges, because I think one of the big economic issues we have in Arkansas is that we don't have enough skilled craftsmen, and we we're having trouble recruiting new industry, especially manufacturing, that's now moving back on shore to America because we don't produce an adequate skilled labor force in Arkansas. And I rarely go to any city in Arkansas that an employer didn't walk up to me and said, man, I've got jobs if you got somebody who can operate a machine. And if you walk through those kind of places and you look at the people operating those machines or that equipment, they've all got gray hair and they're not any young people standing behind them. So I will aggressively seek to additional funding for our two-year community colleges because I think they have two things. They have the resources to work with regional high schools to start creating technical and vocational training in our high schools so our children as early as 9th or 10th grade can start selecting a career path that may not include a four-year baccalaureate degree. And then also, they have the flexibility to create curricula that produce skilled craftsmen for potential employees. If I'm recruiting a new business to come to Arkansas, and I'm sitting across the table from this business owner and I want him to move to Arkansas, and he needs skilled laborers, I want a president of one of our community colleges where we want him to locate sitting right next to me saying, you tell me what kind of skills you need your employees to have, we'll have a curriculum in place by this fall.
You've been hearing from Curtis Coleman, who will face Asa Hutchinson in the Republican primary on May 20th. Thanks for talking with us.
I enjoyed it, Jacob. Thanks for the opportunity.
I'm Jacob Kaufman with KUAR News.